Hello and welcome to Architecture Masters at Home, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture. I'm Owen Wainhouse.
And I'm Tamsy Thompson.
We're joined today by Ellie Stethacki, Architecture Editor at Wallpaper Magazine. Wallpaper Magazine was founded in 1996 and quickly became one of the world's most influential international lifestyle titles. Wallpaper, with the tagline, "The Stuff That Refines You," covers design and architecture, fashion, travel, art, and lifestyle in its own super stylish way. Ellie originally studied architecture in her native Greece before moving to London in 2002 to continue her studies at the Bartlett School of Architecture. We joined Ellie down the line, where we started by checking that she wasn't still working from Wallpaper's stylish offices.
Well, no. Not even the home office as such, because I don't have one. I'm at my bedroom. I'm at home, as most of us are these days.
And how are you finding working from home?
I mean, in some ways, it's actually really nice. I suppose, in a way, I'm a kind of typical introvert, so I quite like to kind of stay indoors and, you know, read my books and, work from the safety of my home somehow. But on the other hand, obviously, you know, it has all the challenges that working in a sort of family setting has, because I have a 3-year-old. But, you know, we manage. We shouldn't be complaining.
I think we wanted to start by, so I guess, asking you about your perceptions of London and the London architecture scene. We have this mantra at LFA that we keep going on with, that there's nowhere really like London to come to study architecture, participate in architecture, practice it, procure it, or experience it culturally. And we cite lots of people that come from all over the world to do just that. And of course, you are one of those people. So you could talk to us about your decision to come to London, because I think you came to do your master's, is that correct?
Yes, exactly. So I studied architecture in Greece. I did my whole first degree, qualified there, in the University of Thessaloniki. There were two things going on. On one hand, I think I was having too much fun. I was trying to prolong this sort of idea of being a student and experimenting and trying different things. And I also really like traveling. So I was looking to do a master's abroad. So I did a little bit of research and I ended up applying for the one at the Bartlett, which I did, architectural history. I mean, I have to say I was primarily attracted by the course, but then obviously the fact that it was in London, a place that I've heard so much about and I had never been before, was really a key draw for me as well.
And when you came and you did that, were you still planning on being an architect? What was your kind of thinking on that?
I never thought about not being an architect, if that makes sense. In Greece, I guess, especially at the time, you kind of are what you study. Like, it's quite straightforward. So if you study architecture, nobody will question you will be an architect. You know, if you study law, you'll be a lawyer. There is not a lot of sort of jumping between disciplines. And I think you see a lot more of that maybe here or maybe now. Mm. So I never really thought I'd do journalism. I don't think architectural journalism as such kind of almost existed in Greece at the time. Obviously there were journalists who wrote about architecture, but I don't know if somebody specialized as such. There were a lot of architects writing about architecture, but that's also a little bit different. So I guess I was thinking I would practice, but I was still trying to find my way, in all honesty. The master's I did was a theory-based one. Mm. So it was history and theory. So I guess subconsciously I was kind of moving away a little bit from practice, but not as a conscious decision. The idea of becoming a journalist actually came up during the master's, because we had a module talking about architectural journalism. And I had a light bulb moment thinking, oh, hang on a minute, I didn't know you could actually do that.
Do you remember who taught that at the Bartlett?
We had the course was led by Adrian Forty and Ian Borden and Jane Rendell, did a lot of the teaching as well. And we had a lecture by Vicky Richardson that was actually quite interesting about how to do interviews. I mean, in a way, it was quite sort of basic things because none of us were journalists. So they were, you know, kind of trying to explain to us how kind of even basic journalism works, like as in make notes. If you interview somebody, you know, you have to like record as well as write things down. But it was also informed, obviously, by the layers of the theory or whatever we were exploring at the time. So it was actually a good marriage between, you know, architecture and the practical bits of being a journalist.
And then did you go on to work with Vicky after that? Did your time at Blueprint overlap?
No, actually, coincidentally, our paths crossed again much later. But when I finished the course, I kind of started doing a PhD, which I then abandoned. It just wasn't for me. I needed something a bit more fast-paced, I guess. And then I tried out, I interned at the Architecture Foundation. I worked in practice a little bit, a few months in an office doing, office retrofits. And then, And then after that, I started the internship at Blueprint when Vicky was there. And I actually remember it very, very fondly. She was absolutely great. She was an amazing team sort of motivator. She had everybody really involved, me as an intern as well, obviously not permanent member of staff. And then I stayed on a little bit helping out when a member of staff left, and then I covered for a while. And yeah, generally, I think it was such an informative experience, kind of really inspired me to, you know, take on that route.
Great. Well, I want to come onto the career in a minute, but whilst we're talking about Greece, maybe it's just me being trapped inside, but I've been thinking a lot or dreaming a lot maybe about that idealised view of modern Greek architecture and stunning whitewashed villas right by crystal blue seas, as well as that legacy of, you know, historic and, well, iconic architecture. But I guess maybe just tell us... I guess I'm interested in the path not travelled and what it's like or could have been like for you as an architect in modern day Greece if you hadn't sought a career elsewhere.
I think it's quite interesting. You know, obviously there is that image of Greece that you describe, and it's absolutely there and true. All the monuments, all the whitewashed villas, all the amazing locations. However, living in Greece in an urban setting is miles from that, I feel. I guess Greece, after the sort of Second World War, Civil War, there was a sort of wave of rapid urbanization around the sort of starting, I guess, around the 60s. And that resulted like a huge number of population going to towns and mostly the capital, Athens, which has about half of the whole population of Greece now. And the result is that everything was built really, really quickly to house a vast number of people. And it was all kind of mostly privately done. So no like council housing as such. But that meant that whole cities are built around, you know, sort of what local developers were doing. And I mean, let's just say they didn't always have the sort of best urban interests in mind. So the Greek towns are very kind of concretey and built up. That has its beauty, absolutely. But there usually there's a big need for you know, they're very dense and there's a need for public space and green space.
And is, some countries, think about the kind of professions, you know, that in some countries maybe the engineer is venerated more than the architect. Is the role of architect held in high esteem in Greece? Or is there more kind of focus on engineers as, you know, what parents want their kids to go into?
Yes and no. I think there's definitely a certain status to being an architect. I think people like that it's you know, it has its artistic side and it has its more kind of sort of flair in a way. That said, engineers probably get more work in Greece because up to a certain size of a building, you don't really, I think, need an architect's permission always.
Yeah, yeah. Tamsi, do you want to go on to the next? We're going to go from architectural history into practice. We've covered that a little.
I was wondering if it's worth going back and exploring a bit more, Ellie, about your kind of first architectural impressions of London.
Sure, sure. I mean, when I first came to London, I think as an environment, it couldn't be any more different than where I came from, really. I was also, I have to say, one thing that also kind of still strikes me is, you know, the fact that you get like rows and rows of houses that are, look exactly the same. Like you, I still can't get over that up to a point. And then you go inside and, you know, it's a different world. Like all of them are a little bit different and you can do whatever you want, but you still have this like roads and roads of a very similar style. And then, of course, in between, you have amazing, you know, like modernist gems and contemporary architecture, of which, again, in Greece, you have few and far between in comparison, I guess, especially in the smaller cities. So in a way, it's for a student of architecture, I think, or anybody interested in architecture, I think it's an absolutely amazing place. It's like a candy shop. You can see from, you know, sort of Victorian and further back up until, you know, what's happening right now and the real cutting edge. Like you can see trends being kind of explored and flowering, and you can see weird experiments that, you know, potentially failed as well. There's absolutely everything, any style you like. I do find that fascinating.
Yeah, it's interesting. Really interesting what you're saying about all the houses that look the same. I remember when I was doing my master's at LSE, the urban design course there, sort of became really good friends with someone from America, and he said exactly the same. He'd lived in the sort of middle America and then more recently for the last 10, 15 years in New York, and he just couldn't get over this kind of regularity of terraced and semi-detached housing with the chimney pots and the facades and everything. It's kind of architectural wallpaper, yeah. Almost.
Absolutely, and you can almost, in a way, if you look at it from like a little bit more zoomed out, you can almost guess where in the city you are. So if you have more kind of 1930s sort of semis, you're more in the suburbs. If there's more Victorian stuff, hilly areas, you may be either just north or just south, depending. Or, you know, you have the grand sort of stuccoed mansions, and that's probably west. So it's quite interesting. But in a up close zoom, you wouldn't probably be able to tell where exactly you are.
So we talked there, Tamsi mentioned there, the kind of architectural wallpaper. It kind of brings us on maybe to Wallpaper Magazine in a slightly awkward segue, maybe. You obviously kind of cut your journalistic teeth, as it were, initially at Blueprint, and then took on a editorial of architectural assistant job at Wallpaper.
Yes, yes, that was my title. Architecture assistant was my first.
I first remember probably about the same time coming across Wallpaper Magazine. It became very quickly a kind of iconic title, and you know, people talked about Generation Wallpaper, you know, hugely influential legacy of a magazine and a hugely influential style. I guess, I mean, there's a few things there. I guess a lot of our listeners will be interested in what makes I guess it's a dream for a lot of architects to be featured in Wallpaper Magazine. Yeah, a lot of people will be interested in what makes a wallpaper story. But yeah, just be interested to talk about your kind of route through and progression from assistant up to architecture editor in the magazine.
Yes. I suppose this job came up. My contract at Blueprint was sort of finishing, and I was kind of looking at kind of next steps, and this job came up at Wallpaper, and I applied.
This is early 2006.
This is 2006, exactly. Okay. This is 2006. So early 2006, yeah, I applied, I got it, I started in the summer. I mean, in a way, it was so different to, you know, Blueprint and other architectural magazines that I had sort of more close connections with, purely because it's not an architecture magazine. Mm-hmm. It is a wider design and lifestyle title, so it treats things a little bit differently. At first, I was a little bit, I don't know, perplexed about it, I guess, or I was kind of exploring how I fit in into everything. But I actually really enjoyed it very quickly, and I kind of, it was, apart from the fact that it was an amazing team and we had such fun, it was also the fact that I really enjoyed the fact that it speaks to a wider range of people. I think it's really interesting that, and that's not to say, obviously, you need all kinds of magazines and all kinds of voices, but I feel like it's really important to be able to speak to and translate what you feel architecture is to not just architects. Obviously, a dialogue in the architecture profession amongst professionals and peers and academics is hugely important. Nobody would argue differently, but at the end of the day, you know, where does the public sit? Like, where do the clients stand in that discussion? I think that's something that Wallpaper is really good at, kind of reaching out to people who are not necessarily experts in that. They are all design aware. You know, our audience is made up by people who, either by profession or just personal interest, really, you know, like design in all its forms, but may not be necessarily architects or planning experts.
I think one of the things that initially, you know, when I first picked up Wallpaper, that kind of struck me about its, you know, writing style was certainly somewhere I felt at home. You know, it was talking about travel and about design objects and aviation and aircraft, and to not really be ashamed of people knowing the details about something. You know, I was always a bit of an aviation geek, and here was a magazine that wasn't afraid that somebody knew the difference between a jumbo and a 777 or something in terms of their design and how they're built and how they work, and a kind of veneration of style in, you know, in travel or in architecture, I thought was always really interesting.
100%. I think it's one of the first, if not the first magazine, who actually recognized that design is literally everything around us, from, you know, airplanes to door handles to buildings and even a pattern on the floor. You know, anything is designed by somebody, and, you know, you can't really treat it separately. You can't see a building because it just stands in a context of other things. So you have to look at everything if you want to have a design kind of informed opinion.
Yeah, that, I mean, as you say, for me, you know, I didn't study architecture, I didn't study design. I did a weird physics degree, but suddenly to find this magazine that talked about,
oh wow,
you know, as you say, like a door handle, you know, it was the only place I thought, actually, it is okay to be like fascinated by a door handle, or to be, you know, how that works and how it feels. That certainly for me, nowhere else had I read anything that, you know, said it was okay to be interested in that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. I know plenty of people who'd be talking hours about
so just,
a door handle.
Just tell us then about, you know, about how you now as architecture editor, you have control, I guess, over the stories that come into the magazine, and about, you know, what is it you're looking for in terms of things that you cover at Wallpaper magazine, and what, you know, what drives a wallpaper architecture story?
You know, in some ways it's really simple. Like, we are very much led by the visuals, so we like to, you know, turn the page and have this wow moment where you see something and you kind of instantly want to be there. I mean, Wallpaper is a lot about escapism and about dreaming and aspiration. And you know, you want to look at places and houses and buildings that kind of impress you. But at the same time, it obviously is very important that it has an interesting story behind it. And that's what we're trying to do, kind of tell the story of how this amazing sort of building came together from... all kind of told from the architect's and or designer's point of view, rather than the clients. So if we're talking about somebody's home, you know, it would be led by the architect rather than, you know, this is so-and-so's home, if that makes sense. At the same time, it is actually quite hard to put my finger on and say this is the particular thing that we're looking for. We do have a certain house style, I suppose. Wallpaper was sort of established with a view and an admiration for sort of modernist, clean architecture. You know, we would do contemporary styles, minimalism, but then it's really hard to talk about like styles as well, because projects vary. And also, I mean, you know, we'd be a very boring magazine if all we did was modernist houses. So you need to mix it up a bit, but it still needs to have a certain sort of look that feels right for us. But if you're asking me to define it, it's impossible. I know it when I see it, 100%. We cover all sorts of things. I mean, we do a lot of houses, but also cultural buildings. We do commercial work, office interiors, not that often. But I mean, it really depends on the project. It just, you know, if it's a really strong project, we would absolutely do it. And, you know, I kind of select things, but, you know, obviously everything is overseen by our editor-in-chief.
No, I was going to say, and I guess now we're all sort of trapped inside our homes, it makes us even more acutely aware of the design deficiencies in our own homes and objects and furnishings and everything. Do you see that sort of public mood coming through in later editions of the magazine at all? Do you see how it influencing your editorial or your content in any way?
I mean, we absolutely try to respond to, you know, the mood and the current times. At the same time, we need to keep a balance between what's right for wallpaper and what's right for now. So it's, say, the wallpaper version of what's happening now. Also in print, because we do work with quite long lead times, it's actually slightly slower to respond. Mm-hmm. The area that has been really growing and actually changing more significantly these times is our website. Apart from the fact that, you know, it has been doing so well at the moment. Also, we've adjusted our coverage a little bit to kind of talk a little bit more about things that we feel people might want to see or read. There's discussions about, you know, obviously we do a lot of houses anyway, so I think that just keeps going. People always love to look at houses, and it's something that's relevant to everybody. Anybody can relate with a brilliant sort of house, interior or exterior. But also we've done, and we want to do more features about projects sort of in the future, things that are in construction, even if that's paused at the moment, but things that we can look forward to, and sort of things that you think like will make you smile. And you know, if you're trapped indoors and time passes differently, so you feel like, you know, we've been inside for, say, I don't know, three, 4 weeks. it feels like it's been 6 months already. But actually, you know, things wouldn't have changed that much, even in like things were going on, you know, as normal. And in the grand scheme of things, you know, something that was planned to finish and, you know, kind of open next year, or will probably still open next year, depending on how things go. So we try to kind of either look at the now or the future to kind of balance a little bit, you know, what you need now and what you have to look forward to when hopefully all this is over. Another thing that we've actually been doing is we've launched a series of articles called like Worldview Letter from, you know, a city. And we're talking to designers from those cities and a little bit like a sort of report or a discussion about how they're coping with this, how it has affected their work. You know, they all deal with it in a different way. You know, some have less work, some are not that affected. Some of them decide to kind of donate proceeds to, you know, good causes or at the moment, or, you know, some launch think tanks and, you know, try and kind of engage in a dialogue and try and solve problems that way. It's just really interesting. We've done a few now from obviously taking advantage of our kind of reach. So we've talked about Singapore and New York, London, Paris, a couple of others, and we're planning a few more to come as well.
I guess that brings in the other thing people will know Wallpaper for increasingly are the city guides for travel and being the, you know, the place people turn when they're off somewhere new.
Yeah.
You did the Athens city guide, did you?
I did. I did the, actually, I did the second Athens city guide. The first one was done, I literally just arrived at Wallpaper and they were launching them at the time. So I helped with the first one, but I didn't write the first one. But they, obviously it's a travel guide, so it needs to be updated a lot. So they all get updates every 2 to 3 years. So I've done the second and the third. And I've also done the one for Antwerp that I did from the beginning. Yeah. No connection.
Yeah.
I just wanted to travel to Antwerp.
You just choose the cool cities you want to cover.
Why not? I had never been. And actually really helped me discover Belgium. And it has an amazing architecture scene. I'm in love with it, like, since. I've always been fascinated by it.
Yeah,
I love it. But Antwerp, it kind of helped introduce me a bit.
I used to live in Brussels, and for a while I was contemplating moving to Antwerp and putting up with a commute back to Brussels just because Antwerp was so cool. And then like reality of a like commute on Belgian trains like hit in, and I thought, no, I'll stay in Brussels. But
oh, amazing.
Great. So I thought, just on the short bit of time we've got left, begin just talk about this year's LFA. You've obviously been on our curation panel helping to select some of the events for the festival.
Oh, I love it.
Things have changed a little bit now, I guess, with us doing a digital festival in June and the traditional festival later on in the year. But we're still sticking to the theme of power this year. I know you've written a little bit for us on power. Just be interested to get your thoughts on what power and architecture means for you in the kind of current context.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was thinking about how this, when I saw that you were, you know, the festival is being launched online, and, you know, apart from just the just practical and physical changes, that it will take place in different platforms, and possibly because of that reason might attract different kind of audience as well. I was trying to think about how, you know, the theme might be affected, like, in the sense that obviously everything I said and all the my fellow sort of panelists said, you know, at the beginning still stands. You know, it's about the power of design and communities and how, you know, about decision making, all that is still there. But I was wondering if there might be something more to say about kind of power of things and situations in this current climate. Like, you know, you're stuck indoors, but, you know, the power of having a garden, the power of, you know, what views you're seeing outside the window, or what makes your day kind of in this situation. Is it a material? Is it the fact that your house has an amazing sort of wooden wardrobe or floors? Or is it like a concrete wall that's really cool, and in this sort of heat, if you don't have a garden to get out to, it kind of helps, you know, cool you down in a way. Yeah. Just the little things. Oh, yeah, that comes from my summers in Greece. We used to, like, we had a marble staircase in my home, and I just love sitting there during the heat waves. It's amazing. Anyway, so I was just thinking about,
It's a very Wallpaper answer, really. Yeah, the idea about the stuff that surrounds you is increasingly important.
I know it's you know, we talk all about the big things, but also you have to think about the detail as well, because, you know, the city might be amazing, but if your own home is not designed in a way to empower you, then I think you're probably missing something.
Absolutely. And lots of people, I guess, are going to be thinking about home improvements and changing their homes, and I guess we'd say read Wallpaper for more inspiration. That's great. Thanks, Ellie.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure.
You've been listening to Architecture Masters at Home. I'm Owen Wainhouse.
And I'm Tamsie Thompson.
Thanks for listening.